Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 86. My name is John. Play me some banjo. Make me some noise. Take me for granted till my children got no choice. Pour me a little gravy. Protect my muse. Torture me out of my dumb little mind and leave me all confused. And make my head swim. There is no particular theme to this podcast. I'm just getting a few things off my mind that won't take 30 minutes to talk about, although the first topic probably would deserve a full podcast. It just happened organically in writing this that I alternate between one somewhat lengthy topic and then a quick comment or two on another subject. So, jumping right on in, first topic, the postmortem on Red Eye. I came home on a Tuesday afternoon a few weeks ago. On Tuesdays after work, my standard operating procedure was to take a shower and watch Red Eye before making dinner for Gina and myself. I sat upstairs on the love seat, stretched out, letting go of the stress of the workday, turned on the TV and opened the DVR menu. The Red Eye music came on and the title graphic. Tom Chaloux was out that day, so TV's Andy Levy was hosting. After the guest introductions, Andy paused to announce that Red Eye was being canceled. I couldn't believe it. This is a popular show that has grown in popularity over the years. It's funny, irreverent, and smart. And I had been consistently watching it for the last 8 years. I was pissed. This is one of my favorite shows, with a diverse group of personalities. It was the only show from any of the news networks that I wanted to watch every day. Now, I do find it interesting that Freedom Watch, with Judge Andrew Napolitano, was canceled. Then The Independent, then Stossel, and now Red Eye, which was hosted by Tom Chaloux after Greg Gutfeld left a couple of years ago, but heavily featured Andy Levy. Of course, The Independence was replaced with Kennedy, but all these shows that have been canceled starred or featured libertarians. Sure, ratings are always a factor in keeping shows on air, but Red Eye's audience had been growing, according to recent posts by The Star, several weeks before the cancellation was announced. It made no sense to me. In fact, I'm still pissed. I'm not much for watching news channels to begin with, but when they actually produce a show worth watching and then take it away when, from all accounts, it seems to be doing well, I'm even less inclined to watch what's left. There was a strangeness, a uniqueness to the show that people like me just loved. It helped that there were some absolutely beautiful guest commentators. Now, for all the knee-jerk feminists out there who automatically assume I'm objectifying these women, I just want to say, go fuck yourself. I can find a woman attractive and still be able to listen to her and find her mind fascinating too. If you can't wrap your myopic minds around that, then you are every bit as inane, inconsequential, and idiotic as I expect. Anyway, because of Red Eye, over the years, I was introduced to Kerry Keegan, Bonnie McFarlane, Jedediah Bela, S.E. Cupp, Katie Lindendahl, Catherine Tenth, Patty Ann Brown, Harris Faulkner, Megan McCain, Dana Perino, Kelly Powers, and Lauren Savon. Already, that list makes it the most worthwhile show on any of the news channels. If I could turn on Red Eye on any given night and have a chance of seeing any one of those women, it's worth watching. Because of Red Eye, I was introduced to Andrew W.K., Mike Baker, Sherrod Small, and Steven Cruiser, all of whom follow me on Twitter. Thank you, sirs. Joe DeVito, Joe DeRosa, Jim Norton, John DeVore, Remy Spencer, Michael Moynihan, Liz McDonald, Dagan McDowell, Jill Dobson, Paul Mercurio, Will Ron, Anthony Cumia, Joe Mackey, Imogen Lloyd Webber, Andrew Schultz, Dan Soder, Nick DiPaolo, Camille Foster, Matt Welch, Nick Gillespie, all these people made me laugh or think, and I don't know when or if I would have run across them otherwise. Because of Red Eye, I was also introduced to the late Andrew Breitbart, who, if you listen to this podcast long enough, you know was an inspiration for creating it. He was also instrumental in getting Red Eye, with the original host Greg Gutfeld, on the air. I missed Bill Schultz after he departed, and I enjoyed Joanne Nosejinsky during her time on the show, and I'm glad that they showed her cameo on Gotham a few months back. Over the years, there were some great moments. Some of the obvious ones that come to me immediately are Yoga News, with the aforementioned Laura Savon. That was brilliant for horn dogs like myself, even though I only got to see it in Best Of shows because that was gone by the time I found Red Eye after a late night at karaoke. Really, any time Savon was on was great for me. I have the hots for her like you wouldn't believe. Probably only Kerry Keegan makes my heart beat faster. The night Mick Foley mistook Go Proud chairman Chris Barron for the lead singer of the Spin Doctors was hilarious. I felt so bad for Foley, because that seems like the kind of mistake I may make if I had been researching the other guests on the show like he had done for that night. And also because he was never on Red Eye again after that, and I always wondered if that snafu had something to do with it. On the Red Eye podcast, it was revealed that Chris Barron was angry about the situation. And I gotta wonder why, because it really was an honest mistake. Even though I loved it whenever he was on, only Red Eye would have dared to have the late Odorous Arungus from the band Gwar on the same show as a Catholic priest. That, to me, was one of the most surreal moments on the show, even more so than the segment that alluded to the entire show being made up in Greg Gutfeld's head, or the Halloween shows that often had somebody dressed in a creepy costume quietly lurking under the table or around the studio. Jesse Joyce versus Dana Vachon in their famous insult contest, which you can easily find online, makes me laugh no matter how many times I watch it. I still laugh so hard I tear up because it is so funny. Joyce writes jokes for Comedy Central's roasts, and I highly recommend checking out his outtakes from the Donald Trump roast a few years back. But to me, nothing compares to TV Andy Levy's response to Team Breezy, the Chris Brown supporters who attacked Levy because he brought up Brown's physical abuse of his girlfriend. My all-time favorite moment of the show. It's a huge slice of deep-fried gold. Again, if you followed this podcast for a while, you know both my wife Gina and I were abused in our past. Me by my father, Gina by her ex-husband. So, listening to Levy dissect and demolish the supporters of a person who committed such a violent act is amazing. Like most of these other things that I've mentioned, they are online on YouTube. Go check it out. You will love it. And as I think I've mentioned in the past, I absolutely adore Andy Levy. If I had ever had the privilege of being on that show, I would have flirted with him the same way Katie Lindendahl does, or at least used to. Red Eye is still around in podcast form for now. Hopefully that lasts a while, but considering the poor decision-making Fox News has shown, who the hell knows? I'm going to miss this show, and I'm thankful for everyone involved who made the show and all their hard work. So, cheers to you all at Red Eye. Next topic. This is just a little personal thing. Australian football is back. The 2017 season got underway a little over a month ago. My Geelong Cats have started well, and I hope they keep going. There's still a chance for all of my favorite sports teams, the Chicago Cubs, San Antonio Spurs, and Geelong Cats, to all hold championships at the same time. Yes, it is highly unlikely, but how cool would that be for me? Next topic, United Airlines. Oh, what an enormous clusterfuck. There is absolutely no excuse to use force to remove a paying customer from a flight. I've heard the arguments. I know that the airlines have a right under the law to bump people even if they've already boarded the plane. I know that nobody took the compensation offers from United. I know that the airline then chose to exercise their right under the law to select passengers to bump. I know that the unlucky passenger adamantly refused to the point the representatives of the airline chose to call in law enforcement, and then the passenger refused to the point where the force in enforcement was used. I know. So the fuck what? This is the downside to having a regular job and life while trying to produce this podcast. My solution is the same that others have already published. Oh well, I'll just add my voice to try to bring sanity to the insanity. I chose my words carefully. The airline chose to exercise their right under the law. The law is not always right. The passengers' natural rights were violated with the refusal of the airline to honor their agreement to take him to his destination at the agreed-upon time without giving him an agreeable compensation. The passengers' natural rights were violated with the enforcers physically injuring him. The solution to this problem was simple and obvious. Yes, the airlines under the law are only obligated to offer compensation up to 4 times the amount of the ticket. Again, so the fuck what? I was at a gate once, waiting to board with Gina, when the airline announced they had to bump people to the next flight, and were offering $200 to anybody who would take the next flight. Before I could even ask Gina if she wanted to take the offer, other people had run up to the gate to claim it. The fact that this was the last flight of the night is immaterial. The fact that this passenger was a doctor and wanted to get back to his patients is immaterial. If you couldn't get 4 people to voluntarily get off the plane for the price you're offering, then you increase your shitty fucking offer. If $800 doesn't get people to volunteer, then you offer $1,000. If that doesn't work, then you keep upping the price until you get 4 volunteers. Get them a posh room at a top-notch hotel with some extra perks. Do whatever you need to bribe people. Fuck what the law says you could or should do. Just do what it takes to make everyone agreeable to the terms. A beaten, bloody passenger is inexcusable. A quick addendum. The day before recording this podcast, United came out with a 10-point plan to prevent such disgusting events from happening again. The ones that stood out for me are: limit the use of law enforcement to safety and security issues only. Duh. Not require customers seated on the plane to give up their seat involuntarily unless safety or security is at risk. Duh. Increase customer compensation incentives for voluntary denied boarding up to $10,000. Yeah, that's nice, but fuck that. It should be unlimited. Establish a customer solutions team to provide agents with creative solutions such as using nearby airports, other airlines, or ground transportation to get customers to their final destination. You should have been doing that all along, you stupid fucks. And reduce the amount of overbooking. Again, big old duh. Additionally, Southwest Airlines, which has the highest number of overbooked seats for any United States carrier, announced it would eliminate overbooking completely. Bravo to you. Let's hope this horrible incident continues to have positive repercussions for that industry and they get their act together. Next topic. Aaron Hernandez's suicide. Okay, so former New England Patriots tight end Aaron Hernandez committed suicide in prison. He had recently been acquitted of a double murder, but was still in prison for a separate murder charge. I don't understand why ESPN and the rest of the media spent so much time on this guy. His life appears to be a tragic series of horrible decisions and warning to others not to make the same mistakes. It should be short, quick stories, he's dead, it's over. If I was in charge of a sports network, every story about him would begin and end with an alert to school-age athletes on how not to live your life. Okay, next topic. One more long topic. I know what it's like to deal with hypocrites. Those who tell you to act, behave, and think one way, and then do the exact opposite. So, let's just say, for argument's sake, that you are a member of a church. Now, this church has, for years, stated very specific guidelines of their beliefs in their particular denomination. You, as a member of this denomination, are expected to follow those beliefs. You are not expected or allowed to deviate from them. But this is voluntary. You agree with the tenets of this denomination, so you willingly follow to the best of your ability. Maybe at some point, you do something that the leaders of this church dislike. So you are chastised and expected to fall back in line even if you disagree with the leadership's decision. But remember, this is a voluntary thing, so you obey. But after you are unfairly chastised, you start to piece things together. If what you have done is wrong, why are others not chastised who do the same thing? Why are you held to a different standard? And then you take a closer look at the leadership. See, you aren't chastised for breaking the rules set by the denomination, only doing things in a style they don't like. But the leadership themselves, they are blatantly breaking the rules they have consistently preached to the church. Now, I don't know about you, but when this happened to me, I began to look at things differently. I've mentioned this in a previous podcast, so you may already know the answer, but how many different Christian denominations are there? Before I researched it, I figured there had to be, 50 or 60 different denominations. I was way off. Double it? Triple it? You could do that several times and not be close. There are 40,000 different denominations in Christianity. It's nuts. There are entire denominations based on the interpretation of a single Bible verse. Even if you took out all the nitpicky stuff and narrowed it down to just the main branches of the various denominations, you still have about a dozen major branches, each with its own interpretation of Scripture. And those differing opinions contradict each other. So, maybe you begin to wonder if your leadership acts as though the tenets they preach are immaterial. Are the tenets even correct? Oh, but all these other denominations have the same basic beliefs, so that's okay. Is that good enough for you, even if they contradict themselves? How can you be so sure your denomination is correct if others say the opposite? Just shutting your mouth and blindly believing may be good enough for some people, but it wasn't for me. That's why I left religion. And yet, we have a major modern world religion with leadership who do not practice what they preach. Unless they get called out in public, then they do just enough to get the media off their back. The leaders of this modern religion contradict themselves. They first say one thing, then they say the exact opposite, then they keep their message vague because they realize the first two messages aren't holding up. First, it was global cooling, but things started getting warmer. So then it became global warming, but things started getting cooler. So now it's climate change, which can pretty much apply to anything and everything they can concoct. Oh, there's a drought going on, it must be climate change. A couple of years later, the same region has record rainfall, must be climate change. Convenient. So because of their belief in climate change, you and I have to change our ways because we are the ones responsible. We have to pay taxes so green energy options, which are currently grossly inefficient, can be subsidized because they cannot financially survive on their own. Just like businesses that are too big to fail get tax money, so do industries that can't or won't innovate to make their products viable. Because of their belief in climate change, you and I have to change how we live. We have to pay taxes if we live in a city that fails stricter and stricter EPA regulations every year. We have to pay to help clean up the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico after the previous administration forced regulations that put the well in a more hazardous area to drill, dragged its heels so it took longer than necessary to clean up, and prevented inventors from trying out technology that could have possibly helped clean the spill faster. We have to minimize our carbon footprint. If you want to travel by car or plane or have foods transported from areas you can't get to easily, you're a bad person because you're burning fossil fuel, which is hurting Mother Earth. And what of the leaders of the climate change movement? Well, they can all fly on their private jets to a remote Pacific island for an environmental meeting. And when they overcrowd the airport on that island, they can have their pilots take the jet to another nearby island to burn even more fuel. Their mouthpiece can be the biggest energy burner in his state and not even attempt to go green until he gets bad press about his horrible energy usage. Doesn't sound to me like they are behaving like people who think the planet is in danger. I mean, what does the mouthpiece care? He's raking in multi-millions of dollars as the guru of climate change. The megacorporation, who stands to make multiple trillions of dollars off proposed climate change legislation in Washington, D.C., also happens to be the number one lobbyist. Pretty sure that's not a coincidence either. What if people within that climate change religion who dare to deviate from the scriptures? A man who has scientific proof that polar bear population is increasing? He gets blacklisted. A BBC commentator who believes in climate change but has doubts about some of the findings? He gets fired. What happens when it's discovered one of the leading climate change institutes is found to have falsified data and failed to have their findings peer-reviewed? Well, the other institutes circle the wagons and claim it doesn't matter because they found the same things. So, the falsified data matches your data? Then how can we trust your data? What if the Pacific Decadal Oscillation Theory, proposed by a climate scientist? What if corresponding sun activity to increased temperatures? What if corresponding temperature changes on Mars? What if volcanic eruptions that put out multiple times more pollutants into the atmosphere than the entirety of humanity's existence? What of unreliable temperature readings in the previous century? If your precious beliefs are so undeniable, why are you so afraid to public debate? Is it because of the tremendous amount of money you would no longer have access to if it was discovered you were lying? Is the climate changing? Yeah. The Earth could become a vast desert because of global warming. Or it could be half covered in ice because of global cooling. It's possible because it's happened before. Long before the first humans ever walked the planet. That's the dirty secret. What's happening has nothing to do with us. What's happening to the planet is the natural course of existence in this solar system. Our so-called contribution to climate change? At best, or worst, however you look at it, would be akin to taking a glass of water, throwing it on your grass in the middle of a raging thunderstorm, and telling your spouse you watered the lawn. No one should be subjected to health hazards because somebody is carelessly polluting the drinking water, like Democratic politicians in Flint, Michigan allowed to happen, or the EPA's disgusting pollution of rivers in Colorado that was quickly swept out of the media, and then the EPA refused to compensate for people they affected. That's why there are many in the Libertarian Party who will make the case for environmental regulation, but I prefer litigation to legislation. So, you can take your sanctimonious Earth Day and your hypocritical piety and shove it. Last topic. I said before, I hate to end on a down note, but I'm going to this time around. The last topic is celebrity deaths. I said a few months back, jokingly of course, because I don't really believe this, But you shouldn't curse 2016 for all the celebrity deaths, because you never know if 2017 is going to take exception to the hate and kill off more celebrities. Even though there have been other notable people who have passed in the first third of this year, I wanted to point out a few who affected my childhood. My parents loved a lot of the classic comedians, so it was always fun to watch guys like Don Rickles. He found a style that worked for him, and many who have and will try to imitate it will always have huge shoes to fill. I'm gonna miss you, hockey puck. When I was a kid, I went through a big pop music phase. And at that time, one of the first records, vinyl records, I ever bought was Freeze Frame by the Jay Giles Band. Although I came in late in the history of the band, I still enjoyed their music. The founder of the band, Jay Giles, passed away recently, and his contribution to American music will be missed. After my pop music phase, I really got into oldies. They still get a good mix in my iTunes list. And I was sad to hear about the passing of Chuck Berry. But I gotta tell you, all the people who praised his career in my personal social media feeds amazed me. It made me feel good that some of these people who I had doubts about know good music when they hear it. And lastly, as I've mentioned quite a bit, I'm a big comic book fan. I was never much for horror books, but one character that always drew me in was Swamp Thing. That character exists because of two men, writer Len Wein and artist Bernie Wrightson. Wrightson passed away last month, just up the road from me in Austin, Texas. His artwork was beautifully creepy. Seriously, run a Google image search of his work. It's amazing. He inspired countless artists and delighted many fans. And he too will be missed. On that somber note, I will wrap things up here. No wry final words. Just simply, this is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.